and mumbled a few words. She felt an odd tingling. "What did you do?" "The book has chosen you, Catherine. You alone can access its full power. But it will not do your bidding until your heart is healed. I hope I have given you the means." Before Kate could ask what he meant, the dwarf guards were dragging him away. "Someone bring them brats," growled Hamish. "And wake up, Fergus."
Chapter 14. Granny Pete.
"Come now, wake up, wake up. No good pretending you're still asleep."
Emma groaned and burrowed under the stiff, heavy blankets. She lay there in a state of half-sleep while the woman's voice kept chiding her to get up. Her first thought was that the voice belonged to Miss Sallow, the ornery, House of Bourbon-hating housekeeper at the orphanage. That would mean that everything that had happened, finding the book, going into the past, the Countess, Gabriel, had been a dream. But it had all been so real. Everything had seemed so... What was that smell? She opened her eyes and found that she was lying in a bed in a dimly lit wooden cabin. The air was smoky and close, the floor made of packed earth, and what she'd taken for blankets were actually piles of old animal hides. She turned her head. In the center of the room, a thin boy crouched at a fire, his back to her, stirring something in an iron pot and filling the cabin with the smell of cooking meat and vegetables. Okay, Emma thought, so it wasn't a dream.
"There you are. Sit up now. You're not dead. Not yet, anyway."
The person speaking shambled into view from behind the bed. She was a very fat, very old woman, and she had a great deal of tangled grey hair and a face with more wrinkles than Emma had ever seen. Her hands were gnarled with arthritis, and dirt was caked under her yellowed, claw-like nails. She wore an old black dress and a black shawl, and at least a dozen long, dangling necklaces that were decorated with charms, feathers, beads, tiny jars and vials, bits of root and bark, dried flower petals, the tooth of some enormous animal, and several small, beautifully carved wooden boxes. She shuffled forward in a pair of extremely worn deerskin moccasins, her necklaces jangling softly. If Emma had seen her on the street, she would have thought she was a crazy lady. She pretty much thought the same thing now. She drew back as the woman reached toward her.
"Who are you? Where am I? Where's Gabriel? Don't come near me."
"Touchy one, aren't you?"
"You'd better get away, or when Gabriel gets here, he'll kill you."
"Gabriel, Gabriel. He warned me you'd be a fighter. Yes, he did."
The old woman had a mumbly, sing-songy way of speaking.
"Gabriel brought me here,"
Emma said, relaxing her guard a little.
"If he hadn't, think you'd be alive and talking to me? No's the answer. Ah, but do you not remember? Think now."
And in a flash it came back to Emma, standing on the edge of the chasm, feeling that sudden hot jolt, looking down and seeing the feathered end of the arrow sticking out of her side, her fever as Gabriel carried her through the maze. Instinctively her hand went to her stomach.
"Now, now," the old woman said. "Let Granny do that."
She pulled up Emma's shirt, Emma noticing only then that she'd been changed into a fresh, unfamiliar set of clothes. There was a patch of hardened mud a few inches to the side of her belly button. The old woman's yellow nails picked at its edge, and the mud began to flake off. Emma stared, half horrified, half fascinated, expecting to see a great hole going straight through her side. But when the last of the mud had flaked away, there was only a small pink scar.
"Humph,"
the old woman said.
"Not bad work."
Emma was dumbfounded.
"But how?"
"I know a thing or two. Yes, yes, old Granny Pete knows a thing or two."
She shuffled away, cackling softly to herself.
"I want... Oh!"
A wave of dizziness swept over Emma, and she had to lie back down.
"Food! What you need now. Granny's own stew. Make you strong.
I need to talk to Gabriel. My brother and sister are lost.
Not lost. No, not lost.
The old lady was mixing and pounding something in a bowl, moving about with practiced assurance, adding a sprig of this, a dash of that, opening various vials and jars attached to her necklaces to tap in a bit of this silver powder or shake out a few drops of that green liquid, mixing and grinding all the while.
Found.
What do you mean? You mean they're here? Where are they?
Not here, no. Still under the mountain. Found a friend. Always where you least expect it.
She glanced toward the boy at the fire.
Hurry with that stew.
What are you talking about? What friend? Where?
The old woman scraped what she'd been mashing into a wooden cup, added water, swirled it about, then held it toward Emma.
Drink.
At first, Emma tasted only dirt, but when she got past that, there was mint and rosemary and honey and what she could only call sunlight and, if it were possible, birdsong. She lowered the cup. She could feel a soft golden wave travelling through her blood, spreading down to the tips of her fingers and toes, to the ends of her hair, warming her from within.
Wow!
The old woman smiled, multiplying the wrinkles in her face.
Maybe Granny knows something, hmm?
Who'd they find? Kate and Michael?
The wizard.
Wait, you mean Dr. Pym? They've found Dr. Pym? How do you know?
Saw it. How else? Silly question.
Well, we have to go find them. Dr. Pym has to kill that stupid witch. She's awful. Where are they? We should go right now.
The old woman shook her head, picking up a basket from the floor. Emma could hear jars rattling inside.
You have a different path.
She pulled back the leather flap hanging over the doorway, briefly letting in the full morning light. She turned to the boy at the fire.
Make her eat. I'm going to Gabriel.
Wait, Emma called. I want to...
But as she stepped out of bed, her strength failed her, and she crumpled to the floor. The boy left the fire and helped Emma back to bed. It was then Emma saw that he was not a boy at all, but a girl, maybe a year younger than Kate, but thin and wiry with close-cropped hair. She was rough, more or less, shoving Emma into bed. Then she went to the fire, ladled stew into a wooden bowl, and carried it over, wiping a spoon on her shirt as she came.
You can feed yourself, can't you? You're not a baby.
Course I can, Emma said stubbornly, though truth was, even after drinking the old woman's potion, she was weaker than she had ever felt in her life. She took the bowl and spoon from the girl. The stew was a yellowish broth with hunks of meat, vegetables and potatoes. It smelled like heaven. The girl sat on a stool, crossed her arms, and stared at Emma as if to make sure she finished it all. Emma wanted to stare back, but she was also ferociously hungry, so she alternated between glaring at the girl and slurping up greedy spoonfuls of stew.
I thought you were dead. Gabriel brought you in last night. Another 5 minutes, Granny said it'd have been too late. She's your grandmother? Nah, everyone just calls her Granny, Granny Pete. She's a wise woman, does magic. That's how she cured you. Course, she owns your soul now.
Emma stopped eating. The girl gave a lopsided smile.
I'm kidding. She's not like that. You believed me, though. Did not? Sure you did. You thought Granny Pete had your soul in a jar or something.
Emma decided she didn't like this girl and was going to ignore her.
Gabriel said the witch had you locked up, but you escaped. That true?
Emma shrugged as if it was no big deal.
She's got them men digging in the dead city, down under the mountain. I snuck in there, seen them.
Emma stopped eating. Her curiosity piqued.
What's the dead city? Place the dwarves used to live. See, long time ago they had a city under the mountain. Then one day there comes this big earthquake, right?
The girl seemed to get excited telling the story.
Half the city just got swallowed up. Killed lots and lots of dwarves.
That's when they left and built that other city. Nowadays people think it's haunted, won't even go there. But I ain't afraid.
She looked at Emma.
You know what the witches got them digging for?
Emma stared down at her food.
No. I won't tell anyone. I said I don't know. How come the Countess doesn't have you locked up?
The girl laughed.
She don't mess with us, only the townspeople. You ask me, they deserve what's happened to them, letting themselves get caught like that. I'd have fought her. I don't care if she killed me. Them townspeople are a bunch of cowards.
Emma spooned up a last carrot, then lifted the bowl and drank the broth. She was thinking of the children trapped in the mansion, and how, if they tried to escape, the Countess would hurt their mothers or fathers.
What's your name? Dina. Well, Dina, you don't know what you're talking about, so why don't you just shut your stupid mouth?
The girl jumped up, her hands balled into fists.
If you weren't sick and smaller than me, I'd make you take that back.
Emma threw away the bowl and leaped out of bed. The old woman's stew must have had something in it besides meat and vegetables, because Emma suddenly felt as strong as she ever had.
Go on and try it.
A second later, and the two would have been rolling on the ground, fighting and punching like wildcats. But just then, the flap over the door opened, and a man stepped in. He had the same long dark hair as Gabriel, but he was smaller, more slender, and his face was young and unscarred. Whether he understood what had been about to happen, or even cared, was impossible to tell, for his expression did not change. Glancing at Emma, he said to the girl, "She needs shoes." Dina hesitated for a moment, then, huffing in annoyance, she bent and pulled a pair of worn mocks from under the bed and shoved them in Emma's hands.
"Come with me,"
the man said, turning and raising the flap.
"I want to see Gabriel."
The man looked back over his shoulder.
"Gabriel sent me,"
and he stepped outside. Emma slipped on the moccasins and ran after him, throwing one last defiant glance at Dina. The village was nestled in the shoulder of the mountain between a pair of pine-studded ridges. Stepping out of the hot, close cabin, Emma paused to take a breath. The air was cool and fresh and filled with the smells of a summer morning. Emma saw that there were maybe 2 dozen wooden cabins, some set back among the thick, wasted trees, others crowding in to form the borders of a central thoroughfare that stretched up the slope. If thoroughfare can be used to describe a 20-foot-wide strip of dirt. Emma walked behind the young man, wondering where all the people were. Then they rounded a curve, and she saw. The entire village, or what she assumed was the entire village, was gathered in front of a single cabin. The people were listening to a group of 6 or 7 old men. Emma was too far away to hear, but it seemed like a council of sorts. As Emma and the young man approached, the old men fell silent, their eyes trained on her. Emma's guide nodded respectfully, then held back the flap of the door so she could enter the cabin. The room was dark, and darker still once the flap fell too. The young man hadn't followed her in. Emma stood there, letting her eyes adjust. There was a foul, poisonous smell in the air. A large dark shape came toward her. Emma blinked and recognized Granny Pete. The wise woman took Emma by the arm and drew her into the cabin.
"Where's Gabe?"
The question died in her throat. The old woman had led her to a bed at the back of the room, where Gabriel lay, eyes closed, naked to the waist. 6 deep cuts crisscrossed his arms, and there was a vicious gash in his side. But it was not the wounds that made Emma suck in her breath and bite down on her lip. Blossoming outward from each of the cuts, visible under the surface of the skin, were thick, black tendrils.
"Poison,"
Granny Pete said.
"It reaches his heart. He's finished."
"So do something,"
Emma pleaded.
"Save him. Do something. You gotta."
"Not so easy, child. The ingredients in the antidote are very difficult to find. Used all I had saving your life. Gabriel insisted."
She picked up a bowl half filled with a chunky yellowish paste and began stirring.
I don't know.
Emma looked down at the giant man. He'd saved her, and now he was dying. It wasn't fair. There had to be something. Emma yanked her head back. Granny Pete had suddenly snatched at her face. What are you... But the old woman wasn't looking at Emma. She was staring at the end of her thick yellow fingernail, from which hung suspended a single one of Emma's tears. Granny Pete gave a thoughtful sort of mumble, then shook the tear into her bowl, told Emma to hold still, and collected half a dozen more tears, adding them all to the yellowish mixture.
"Mmm,"
she murmured, shuffling around the bed, stirring.
"Maybe."
"You?"
Gabriel's eyes were open.
"Wanted to see you."
Emma forced herself to smile and put as much cheerfulness and confidence into her voice as she could manage.
"I'm okay. All because of you. And you're going to be okay, too. Granny's going to fix you like she did me. She says she can, for sure. Good as new."
Across the bed, the old woman began smearing the concoction on his wounds. Emma could hear it beginning to bubble and hiss.
"I am glad to see you well,"
Gabriel said, and closed his eyes. "Please," Emma thought, "please let him be okay." She placed her small hands in one of his. The medicine must have burned terribly, for he clenched his hand into a fist, crushing both of Emma's. But she didn't let go. She would not let go. Chapter 15. To the Dead City. Kate and Michael walked in the center of the group, directly behind the dwarf assigned to carry the ancient, white-bearded and loudly snoring Fergus on his back. Hamish marched up front. There were seven in their party. There had been no fanfare when they departed the dwarf city. Hamish said if his people knew he was leaving, they'd insist on throwing a parade, and he'd be kissing babies for days on end. Kate caught the other dwarves trading glances, and Fergus even snorted, then tried to disguise it as a cough, then ended up actually coughing horribly for nearly a minute. They'd left through a small, out-of-the-way gate and proceeded along a series of well-maintained, torch-lined tunnels. All the while, Hamish kept up a constant chatter about the history of the Dead City, various legends associated with it, how many bicep curls he did every morning. Kate moved close to Michael.
"You shouldn't have stood up to Hamish like that," she whispered, then squeezed his hand. "But it was really, really brave."
Michael looked embarrassed.
"It was no big deal."
"Yes, it was. Emma would have thought so, too."
Their conversation was muffled by the rattling of the dwarves' armor, the clank of iron heels on stone, Fergus's snores, Hamish's droning commentary, and when Michael spoke again, Kate had to ask him to repeat himself.
"Do you think she's okay?"
"I do," Kate said, with more confidence than she felt. "And like Dr. Pym told us, Gabriel is with her. He won't let anything happen."
"I wonder if we'll ever see her again."
"Of course we will. Don't even think that."
Michael nodded and then quickly changed the subject, saying he didn't understand why Hamish wasn't bringing more dwarves. The Countess couldn't have that many screeches. Why not just order his army to drive them away?
"It's the Salmak Tower."
The dwarf who'd spoken was walking behind them. He had black hair, a black beard, and a thick, heavy brow. He looked younger than the other dwarfs. He made a point, Kate noticed, of keeping his voice low.
"Like a year ago, right? King found out that ever since the witch got here, she'd been talking to them slimy dwarf-murdering fiends. You know about them, right?"
Kate nodded, remembering her dream in the dungeon, the pale, sightless creature advancing on Gabriel, its claws tapping on the stone floor of the maze.
"Well, she's been promising them stuff. Baths are what they need, ask me. Point is, she's protecting herself, building alliances.
So now if Hamish, the king, I mean, tried to attack us creatures, she'd have odds and odds of Sal Mac Tarr to help her out. Be open war, wouldn't it? King don't want that. What's your name?
Kate asked.
Wallace,
he said, then added for no obvious reason,
the dwarf.
The party had been walking for nearly an hour, and they came out of the tunnel to the edge of a large crevasse. Kate and Michael could hear, but not see, water flowing in the darkness far below.
The Cambridge River,
Hamish proclaimed, kicking a rock over the edge,
runs down through the mountains, past the town, and right up to the dam. Used to be how we traded with them idiot townspeople, till the witch came. Woman has no respect for the forces of commerce. Come on now, the bridge is close. We can cross over into the old kingdom.
Hamish would have made a good tour guide,
Michael said as they walked along the edge of the crevasse.
He's really well informed.
He used to be one,
Wallace said.
Before the Queen died, when visiting dignitaries would come, he'd show them around. Always did a right fine job. When he was sober, I mean.
As they neared their destination, Kate found herself thinking about the things Dr. Pym had said. Why should a vault, sealed more than 1,000 years ago, a magic vault that would only open for a few special people, open for her and Michael and, she assumed, Emma? How was that possible? And what had the wizard meant, that it should be you of all children? Her of all children, what? And what about him saying the book had chosen her, but to access its full power, she first had to heal her heart? The more Kate thought about everything, the more confused and troubled she became. They arrived at an arched stone bridge guarded by a single dwarf. Seeing the king, he went down on one knee. Hamish asked for news from the dead city.
Nothing, your highness, though whatever that witch is looking for, she'd better find it in a hurry. Them townsmen ain't gonna last much longer, not with how them screechers whip them and starve them and work them night and day. You ask me, we should drive them out of our mountains, and—
Right, but who asks you, eh? You just stand there and hold your bloody spear, you nit.
Hamish shook his head and started over the bridge, muttering,
Everybody's got a bloody opinion.
On the other side of the bridge, Hamish ordered his dwarves to take off their armor. He didn't want them to make more noise than they had to. Then he poked Fergus awake.
Come on, you old coot. Time to sing for your supper.
Fergus opened his eyes. They were roomy and unfocused.
We crossed the stone bridge. How do we get to this golden cavern, then?
The golden cavern.
He seemed to have no idea what Hamish was talking about.
Aye, the golden cavern. The golden cavern. If you were lying and don't know...
He seized the old dwarf's beard.
Through the gate,
Fergus murmured.
West along the ridge, there's a doorway marked with crossed hammers, and then stairs, many stairs.
Right,
Hamish said, turning to the group.
You lot had better be like mice.
They crept down a dark, poorly maintained tunnel, which ended abruptly at a large iron door. Hamish dug beneath his beard and pulled out a heavy key. He fitted into the lock, took a breath, and turned it. The bolt shot back loudly, the sound echoing down the corridor. Kate felt the dwarves cringe. Hamish looked back, sheepish.
Sorry about that.
The tunnel ended some 20 yards past the door, giving out onto what looked like a huge, brightly lit cavern. Hamish silently ordered them onto their bellies, and the 5 dwarves and 2 children got down and crawled forward. Kate could hear the sound of hammering and smashing, shouted orders, the crack and slap of whips. Then she and Michael were at the lip of the cavern, looking over. They were several 100 feet above the floor of the city, which, as far as Kate and Michael could tell, for its borders stretched away to darkness, entirely filled the hollowed-out heart of the mountain. Kate thought it resembled nothing so much as a vast snow-globe metropolis, one that had been shaken and shaken until towers collapsed, buildings crumbled, and fissures tore open the streets. It was the corpse of a city left to rot for centuries. Until now. Directly below them, dozens of hissing gas-powered lamps poured down light onto the ruins. Most of the work was taking place in a giant roofless building. Kate could just make out men-sized shapes moving about, but they were too far away, and there was too much dust in the air to see clearly what was happening. Not that it mattered. She knew the building had to be the old throne room, and the shouting and the snap of whips told the rest of the story.
Calmartia, Hamish said quietly. The dead city.
I can't believe it,
Michael whispered, pushing back his glasses, which were threatening to slip off his nose.
An ancient dwarf city. I wish I had my camera.
Kate did not mention that she had seen this city once before. In a dream 2 nights before, she had seen it being destroyed. Hamish motioned them back from the edge.
Keep low and silent,
he hissed,
or we are all dead.
Granny Pete eventually shooed Emma out of the cabin.
But,
she stuttered as the old woman hustled her to the door. The black tendrils of poison under Gabriel's skin had faded, but he had yet to reopen his eyes. Emma wanted to be there when he did.
I need him alone,
the wise woman said.
I'll call you soon enough.
Outside, the morning was nearly gone, and the crowd in front of the cabin had disappeared. Emma stood there, looking up and down the dirt street. The only signs of life were a few dogs nosing through the remains of breakfast.
Is he gonna die?
Emma turned. The girl Dina stood at the side of the cabin. Emma guessed she had been trying to peer in the windows.
Course not,
Emma scoffed.
Take more than a bunch of screeches to kill Gabriel.
Dina didn't say anything. She just stood there, looking at her.
What?
Emma demanded.
He's going to be fine.
Dina neither spoke nor moved. Emma turned away and sat down on a log. She scooped up a handful of pebbles and began pitching them one by one at an iron pot. After a few moments, Dina came and sat beside her. She gathered up her own handful of pebbles, but instead of throwing them, just moved them from hand to hand, sifting out the dirt.
My parents got killed last year.
Emma looked at her, but Dina was focused on the pebbles going from hand to hand.
They were up near Cambridge Falls. Some of the witch's screeches caught them. Probably thought they were from the town, trying to escape or something.
Really? The girl nodded. Then Emma said,
My parents disappeared 10 years ago. Are they dead?
No. I mean, I don't know.
They were both silent for a moment.
I'm sorry, Emma said, about what happened to yours.
Gabriel tried to get everyone to go fight the witch then, but they wouldn't do it. Same like they won't do it now. Bunch of cowards.
And the girl hurled the entire handful of pebbles so they clattered dully off the pot.
What do you mean? Emma asked.
That's what they're in there talking about,
Dina said, nodding up the hill to a large two-story rectangular cabin.
Last night, Gabriel woke up the whole village, yelling that they all had to go fight. He was almost falling over 'cause of the poison. Now they'll just talk about it and won't do nothing. They're all... Hey, where are you going?
Emma was striding up the dirt lane. She could feel the blood in her cheeks, and the edges of her vision were clouded with anger. Gabriel had told them they had to fight. Emma was going to make sure they did. She pushed through the flap and into the warm, smoky air. It was a single, large room. The old men Emma had seen earlier were gathered around a fire in the center, while the rest of the village, ringed them on benches, stood against the walls, or looked down from the tiered balconies above. One of the old men was speaking.
We've no way of knowing how powerful the witch truly is,
We have a responsibility, yes, but not to the people of Cambridge Falls. We have a responsibility to our blood, to our history.
He was beating his cane against the ground, raising small clouds of dust.
What if we fight her and lose? What revenge would she take? We don't know. We don't know what she could do. We can't risk it.
He sat down to much murmuring. In a flash, Emma had leaped up onto a bench.
You're all gonna die.
The entire meeting hall, the old men in the center, the people on the benches and against the walls, the ones in the balconies overhead, all turned from whomever they were talking to and looked at her.
You think you don't do nothing, she's just gonna let you go? Is that how stupid you are?
A voice inside Emma's head said she should probably not call these people stupid, but she ignored it.
'Cause that's the stupidest thing I ever heard in my life.
The old man who'd spoken raised his cane and pointed it at Emma.
Remove that child.
Emma saw a woman move toward her. She wished Kate were here. People listened to Kate.
It's true. I've seen it. Everything's dead. The trees, the animals, they're all dead. I've seen it. This place is going to be cursed.
Remove her,
the old man croaked, stamping his cane on the ground.
No!
Everyone stopped and turned, including Emma. Granny Pete's large, somewhat shabby form stood silhouetted in the doorway. She dropped the flap and shuffled forward to stand beside Emma.
She has come to us from the future. If she says these mountains will become a wasteland, then I believe her.
But, Granny,
the old man said, a new tone of respect in his voice,
if what this child says is true...
It is true. Are you deaf or...
Emma began, until a look from the wise woman silenced her.
How are we to know what caused this devastation?
The old man continued.
Perhaps in the future this child comes from, we did fight the witch and failed. Perhaps what the child describes was her revenge.
Call him an old chicken,
Emma hissed. Granny Pete ignored her.
Then we must make sure we do not fail.
She took Emma's hand and led her forward till they stood beside the fire in the center of the old men.
I have been wise woman of this village longer than most of you have been alive. And yes, if we confront the witch and fail, we are doomed. All we are, all our history, all our stories will be wiped from the memory of the world. And yet,
she turned slowly, looking across the congregation,
we have no choice but to fight.
Emma noticed a strange thing begin to happen. The wrinkles were fading from the old woman's face. Her eyes grew brighter, the curve in her back straightened. The old Granny Pete, wrinkled and hunched, was still there, but as she spoke, this other woman, tall and proud and beautiful, appeared as well. It was as if one were laid on top of the other.
We all know the stories that tell of an object of great power buried in these mountains. Many of us believe these stories are what drew the witch. But what is this object she seeks? What is it capable of? The stories do not say.
Granny Pete paused. Emma could see men and women leaning forward. Overhead, balconies creaked as those above shifted to better hear.
It is a book. There were once three great books of magic, the most powerful books of magic ever written. But they were lost thousands of years ago. Even so, all wizards and wise people know of them, know of their power. Each one has the ability to reshape our world. Long ago, I came to believe that one of these books was buried here. But which one, I did not know. Now, thanks to this child, I do.
She laid her hand on the back of Emma's neck. Emma could feel the twisted, calloused hand of the old woman and the smooth, strong hand of the young one.
"The book hidden in these mountains, the one the witch seeks with all her might, is the one that holds the secrets of time and space. It is called the Atlas."
A murmur swept the room, and even though she was standing beside the fire, Emma felt a chill run through her. Granny Pete raised her hand. The murmuring stopped.
"The Atlas allows the user to step through time, to move across the map of history. That alone should seed fear in all our hearts. But there is more."
Emma felt the crowd of listeners press in even further, each of them hanging upon the old woman's words.
"If a person can truly harness the book's power, he will be able not only to move through time and space, but to control it. The very fabric of our world will be subject to his whim. On that day, all our lives, the lives of all those we love, the lives of every person on this planet, will be at his mercy. The Atlas cannot be allowed to pass into the hands of the witch."
She stopped speaking. From the corner of her vision, Emma saw the beautiful ghost woman crumple and fade till, once again, only ancient, elephant-skinned Granny Pete stood beside her. For a few long moments there was nothing but silence. Then a tall, muscular man stood at the back of the room.
"I will fight!"
And one by one, they rose from their places on the benches or stepped forward from the walls until every man between 16 and 60 was standing, declared and ready to fight. The old man sighed.
"Very well, if we must, we must. But who shall lead?"
"I shall."
Gabriel was standing in the doorway, a blanket draped around his shoulders. In a moment, Emma was hugging him, burying her face in his side to hide her tears. Chapter 16. The Black Lake. Keeping close to the rock wall and moving as silently as possible, Kate, Michael, and the small band of dwarves made their way along the ridge above the old city until they arrived at a doorway into whose arch was carved a pair of crossed hammers. They passed through and found themselves in a dark chamber. Hamish rummaged under his beard and pulled out a fist-sized crystal, which he tapped against the wall. Immediately, white light filled the space, revealing a nearly vertical staircase, corkscrewing away into darkness. Hamish jabbed the old dwarf, Fergus, awake.
"Hey! You'll get plenty of sleep when you're dead, which will be soon enough, trust me. This is the right way to go, yeah?"
Fergus blinked his rheumy eyes and peered down the stairs.
"Hey, that's the way. Down, down, all the way down. Left, right, another right, third left, sixth right, eighth left, and on down. Follow your nose is all."
And he fell asleep again.
"Oi, keep him awake! We're gonna need him, bloody hell!"
The staircase was narrow and steep and full of sharp, unexpected turns.
"Like whoever made it wanted you to break your neck," Michael whispered, then added, "I bet it wasn't a dwarf. They probably used an outside contractor."
Fortunately, the other dwarves had produced crystals similar to Hamish's, so Kate and Michael could at least see where to put their feet. What bothered Kate more than anything was that each time they reached a place where the stairs split, Fergus would be prodded awake and forced to tell them which way to go. She pleaded with Hamish to write down what the old dwarf said, so they wouldn't always be waking him, but Hamish scoffed at the idea.
"You'd love that, wouldn't you? Writing things down? There'll be no writing as long as I'm around. You can bet on that. Ha!"
The further down they went, the colder it grew. Soon icicles were hanging from the ceiling, and Kate and Michael could see their breath before them. Kate noticed that the dwarves had begun looking about nervously.
"Supposed to be haunted?"
Wallace whispered. In his right hand, he held the glowing crystal. His left gripped the haft of his axe.
"It's why few dwarves ever come here. Too many died bad in this place. There are stories of dwarves who've gotten lost in the dark and felt icy hands. Maybe you could tell us later,"
Kate suggested. Wallace glanced at Michael, whose eyes were nearly as wide as the lenses of his glasses.
"Aye,"
he grunted, "I can do that."
"Stop!"
The cry had come from Fergus, who Kate had supposed was still sleeping against the back of his porter. His shout caused the children to look up. They had been staring at their feet, fearful of missing a step and tumbling down the stairs, and it was then they noticed that the staircase was ending, and they had arrived in a cavern. 15 feet away was another doorway, and the stairs resumed their downward spiral.
"This is it,"
said the old dwarf.
"Here?"
Hamish said.
"This can't be it."
Kate had to agree. The cavern was a raw room of earth and rock. The only notable points were the two entrances and a small dark lake at one end.
"Nope,"
Fergus said, climbing to the ground and settling himself against the wall.
"This is it." "Is that right?"
Hamish sneered.
"This is the golden cavern you were so certain you could find."
He grabbed Fergus's beard and gave it a vicious tug.
"If you've led us wrong, you old pile of bones, I'll make you eat your beard."
Fergus chuckled.
"'Course this ain't the golden cavern. That's through there it is."
He pointed at the black lake.
"Down to the bottom of the water, you'll find a tunnel. Swim through. Come up. Bang! There you are. Golden cavern, neat as you please. Careful, though."
Fergus pulled out a long clay pipe and began to pack the bowl.
"Something lives down there. Dark and wiggly it is."
He lit the match and gave the pipe 3 short pulls, his cheeks caving inward. Then he leaned back and blew a large, lazy smoke ring. None of the other dwarves had spoken or moved.
"This,"
whispered Wallace, leaning close to Kate and Michael,
"is not good." "What do you mean, something lives down there?"
Hamish demanded.
"What lives down there?"
The old dwarf shrugged.
"Dunno. Never gone in there myself. Not daft, you know." "Then how the bloody hell do you know it goes to the bloody golden cavern?"
As far below the city as they were, Kate wondered how the Countess's screeches couldn't hear Hamish's ranting. Fergus calmly blew another smoke ring.
"Me brother went through, told me all about it." "So why am I not talking to your brother instead of you, you worthless old cod?" "Suspect 'cause he's dead. Remember it clear as day. I was sitting here, right where I am now, enjoying me pipe. I do like a good pipe. Dennis, that's me brother, he disappears into the pool there. I wait, awful long time. Finally, he comes back out, head bobbing up yonder, saying, 'Fergus, old boy, there's a tunnel, and it leads to a beautiful golden cavern.' 'A golden cavern?' I says. 'Aye,' he says. 'And is it real gold?' I says. 'Not real gold,' he says. 'It's oop.'"
"Oop?" Hamish sputtered.
"What the bloody hell does oop mean?" "Nothing. That's the sound he made when the monster ate him, grabbed him round his neck, and down he went. Erp."
For a long moment, no one said anything. Then Hamish exploded. He jumped around, screaming and spitting and smashing anything he could with his axe. For a second, Kate thought he was going to attack Fergus, who was sitting there, smoking his pipe, and not bothering to hide the amused grin on his face.
"Traditionally," Michael whispered, "dwarves aren't big swimmers." "I'm not sure the swimming is the problem," Kate replied.
Huffing noisily through his beard, Hamish stuck his face into the old dwarf's.
"So, this is your secret bloody way? Sending us traipsing through some underwater monster's living room?"
Fergus shrugged.
"Not my way. The way. The only way."
Hamish glowered, and Kate saw his knuckles tighten on his axe as if he were considering lopping off the old dwarf's head. But then he turned.
"Right! Into the drink, you lot!"
he sneered at Kate and Michael.
"And yeah, that means you brats too."
Fergus sent out another smoke ring and chuckled quietly. The party gathered around the black pool. The dwarves had to take off their heavy boots and leave behind all but their lightest knives. Kate and Michael removed their jackets and shoes. Kate transferred the two photos she was carrying, the one of herself in the bedroom and the photo Abraham had given her, the one he'd said was the last picture he'd ever taken, into her pants pocket. Seeing Abraham's photo brought back the morning she'd spent in his room with Emma. It seemed to Kate that, though only a few days had passed, the memory belonged to another life.
"Are you going to be okay?" Michael asked. "Of course, I'll be fine."
Of the three siblings, Kate was far and away the weakest swimmer. The first few orphanages they'd lived at hadn't bothered giving the children lessons. When Kate finally did learn, she was nearly 9, and she had never overcome her fear and unease in the water, her sense that she was always struggling not to drown. And now, as she stuffed her balled-up socks into her shoes, her hands were trembling. A couple of the dwarves gingerly dipped their toes in the water, only to pull them out quickly.
"Maybe it's dead, whatever it was,"
Kate heard one mutter. Fergus was still chuckling and smoking at the back of the cave. Black-bearded Wallace approached with two glowing crystals.
"You'll be needing these. Dark as pitch down there, looks like."
"Thank you,"
Kate said. Despite the light it gave off, Kate found the crystal was cool in her hand.
"Right then!"
Hamish stepped to the edge of the pool.
"No time like the present!"
And he seized a dwarf and threw him in. There was a large splash, and the dwarf's head reappeared as he thrashed about, struggling to stay above the surface.
"Under the water, you!"
Hamish shouted, snatching up a large rock. Seeing he had no choice, the dwarf took a breath and dove. Kate watched the glow of his crystal slowly fade and disappear. There was another splash as Hamish pushed a second dwarf into the pool. One of the dwarf guards began to back away.
"I can't swim, Your Highness."
"Then it's high time to learn."
A splash, and he disappeared as well. Hamish turned on Kate and Michael.
"You go in on yourselves, or your arrer I toss you. Either way, you're getting wet."
"Come on," Kate said.
She and Michael waded into the dark water. It was so cold that Kate's feet and ankles began to ache almost immediately. They came to a ledge. The water barely reached to Kate's knees. The next step would take them into the abyss.
"Michael, your glasses."
"Oh, thanks." He fumbled them into his pocket, trying not to drop his glowing crystal.
"You'd better go first. You're a faster swimmer. I don't want to hold you back." "Kate, it'll be okay."
Even as he nodded, she wondered just how unconvincing she must sound. And for a brief moment, she realized the insanity of their situation. They were inside a mountain, under the remains of an ancient dwarf city, about to dive into a black pool where a monster might or might not still be living. All so they could retrieve a lost magic book. What was she thinking? She had started to take a step back, pulling Michael with her, when a rough hand shoved her from behind.
In you go!
They were swallowed by icy black water. Almost immediately, Kate saw Michael's crystal begin to move away. He was swimming downward. She followed, terrified at the thought of losing him. After a few strokes, Michael leveled off. That's when Kate saw another light off in the darkness, and another, faint and fuzzy, past that. She realized how far they had to go. "Don't panic," she told herself. "Don't panic." They had entered a kind of narrow trench, walls on either side, the rocky ceiling directly above. And below them, well, Kate didn't look below them. She concentrated on the light from Michael's crystal and her own jerky, weak stroke. It was impossible to say how much time passed. Her arms grew heavy, her heart hammered in her chest. Worst was the pressure in her lungs. It felt as if they were collapsing upon themselves, squeezing out every last ounce of air. She tried to tell herself that she wasn't falling behind, even as the glow from Michael's crystal grew more and more faint. Then, something struck her foot. Panic shot through her, and she whirled about. She saw a mass of flailing limbs, and thought for a moment it was the monster. Then she recognized one of Hamish's dwarves. He was making wild gestures, urging her to move aside. She did, and he swam past, with strokes even more crazed and unschooled than hers. He was perhaps 5 feet further on, when 3 long fingers slid up out of the darkness and seized him by the leg. The fingers were a cancerous yellow-green, each one nearly a yard long and as thick around as a man's arm. The dwarf hacked at them with his knife, bubbles exploding around him, but he was already being pulled down. Kate tried to scream and her lungs filled with water. Choking, she swam to the top of the trench, pounding at the rock, searching for air, for escape. The crystal fell from her hands. She grabbed at it, fumbling, but it slipped into darkness. And then there was nothing but darkness, all around her, enveloping her.
"Kate! Kate!"
Her eyes opened. A second later she was coughing and hacking, the foul-tasting water spewing from her nose and mouth. Michael pounded her on the back.
"Come on! Come on!"
"Michael! I'm okay.
I thought...
He hugged her tightly.
"Hey there, no. Let the lass breathe."
Kate felt Michael being pulled away. Wallace stood over them. Water was dripping from his long black beard, and his matted hair was plastered to his face. All about them, dwarves were wringing out their beards, shaking water from their clothes, and meanwhile, everything was suffused with a soft golden light emanating from thousands of points on the walls and ceiling.
"What happened?"
"Wallace found you floating in the tunnel. He pulled you out. He told us..."
Michael lowered his voice.
"He told us what happened."
The dwarf was helping her to sit up.
"Thank you," Kate said. "You saved my life."
Wallace reddened, then, glancing about, he said quietly,
"Captain Robbie told me to look out for you two, but keep that between us then, eh?"
He gave a very unsubtle wink.
"Are you really okay?"
Michael asked.
"Yes,"
Kate said, though even as she said it, she noticed that her whole body was shaking and the tips of her fingers were blue.
"Right then!"
Hamish was a few feet away, coiling his beard into a rope to squeeze out the water.
"Spread out, lads! There's a door hidden here somewhere."
He looked at Kate and Michael.
"You two brats can help."
"No,"
Michael said fiercely.
"My sister's cold and wet. She needs to get warm."
Hamish looked about to argue, but then he saw how Kate was trembling and waved his hand. Wallace pulled out flint and a piece of black wood, and somehow, in moments, had a fire going. Michael had Kate move close to the flames.
"Drink this."
Wallace held out a leather flask. Kate took a sip and nearly gagged. but immediately a warmth spread through her body. The shaking stopped. Her fingers returned to their normal color.
"You two,"
Wallace said to Michael.
"What is it?"
"Whiskey. Me ma's own special mash. She always said it could bring back the dead."
It did not take Hamish's dwarves long to find the hidden doorway. There was a cry, and Kate saw the dwarves clustered at a spot along the golden wall, staring down a tunnel that had not been there moments before.
"Now, that's more like it!"
The dwarf king was beaming. He snapped his fingers at Kate and Michael, who were still huddled around the small fire.
"Right, this ain't a picnic. Let's go, get me book."
50 yards down the passage, the band came to a door. Kate's first thought was that they'd made a mistake. This was not the door to a secret vault. It was more like the door to someone's bedroom, painted white wood with a brass handle. There was even a small plaque in the center that read, "Private." Kate thought the plaque had to be someone's idea of a joke. Hamish grasped the handle and pulled. The door didn't budge. He braced his foot against the rock wall and pulled again. Nothing.
"Dr. Pym said it would only open," Michael began.
"Shut it, you!"
Hamish snapped. He ordered a pair of his dwarf guards to take hold of him, and together the three of them strained against the door till Hamish's hands slipped off the knob and they fell to the ground in a grunting pile. Hamish leaped up, searching for anyone who might be laughing. The dwarves were stone-faced.
"You there!"
Hamish pointed at one dwarf who'd carried his axe through the tunnel.
"Have a chop at it!"
"I doubt it's actual wood," Michael said. "An axe won't..."
"Oi! You want a great bloody sock in the mouth? Then shut your bleeding pie-hole! Now, have at it!"
Kate and Michael stepped back as the dwarf raised his axe, took two running steps, and swung with all his might. There was a clang, the sound of shattering metal, and something flew backward. The something was the dwarf. He lay stunned upon the ground, his axe in pieces beside him. The door did not have a mark on it.
"Right," Hamish said. "Had to try. Guess here's where we see if it's worth bringing your kiddies along. Come on, we're not getting any younger."
"I'll do it," Kate said.
She was thinking the door might be booby-trapped, and if so, she didn't want Michael getting hurt. But as she stepped forward, Kate found herself wishing more than anything that the door would not open. If it didn't open, she and Michael and Emma were not special. They were just three ordinary children, and everyone would see that and let them go. She reached out and took hold of the brass knob. "Please," she thought. There was a soft click, and the door swung open. Chapter 17. Inside the Vault. The first thing Kate felt, as the door opened, revealing a high-ceilinged room, lit by crystals in the walls, and there in the center, sitting on a stone pedestal, as if it had been waiting for her, the book, their book. The very first thing she felt was that after everything that had happened in the last few days, this, the fact the vault door had opened for her and no one else, was the worst turn yet. "We're in deep trouble," she thought. Hamish knocked her to the ground as he rushed past.
"No!"
Hamish's fingers paused inches from the book's leather cover. He turned to Kate, who was being helped to her feet by Michael and the black-bearded Wallace.
"No?
You can't touch it."
"Oh, I can't I? Well, just you watch, missy."
"You'll die."
Kate saw Michael glance at her. She had no idea what she was saying. All she knew was that Hamish couldn't touch the book first. Dr. Pym had said so.
"You're lying,"
the dwarf king sneered.
"Michael and I are the only ones who can pick it up. Dr. Pym told me, but go on. If you don't believe me, see what happens.
except you won't, 'cause you know you'll be dead. But go ahead.
She crossed her arms and tried to look unconcerned.
Hamish turned from Kate to the book, back to Kate, then back to the book. It was obvious he wanted it very badly, but finally he muttered something under his breath, spat, and then snapped his fingers angrily. A dwarf grabbed Kate by the arm and dragged her forward. Hamish leaned in, his breath warm and rotten in her face.
"If you're playing with me, girl, you and your brother are dead. Understand? I'll cut your throats and feed you to that monster in the pool. Now, bring me that book."
Propelled by Hamish's shove, Kate stumbled to a halt a foot from the pedestal. The book appeared to be glowing, the light in the vault enhancing its natural emerald hue. It was then, standing above the book with nothing and no one between it and her, that she finally heard it. The book was speaking to her. It told her it had been waiting for her for 1,000 years. It told her to claim it as her own. She reached out and lifted it off the pedestal. "Now what?" she thought. She felt a tug in her stomach, and the floor disappeared beneath her feet.
"Hello?"
Kate blinked. She was in a study, books and manuscripts in piles everywhere, a small fire crackling in the grate. Outside the window, she could see the tops of cars passing in the street below. Snow was falling, muffling the sounds of the city. But what truly caught her attention was the man sitting 3 feet away. He was swiveled toward her in his chair, a paper and book-strewn desk behind him, dressed in his habitual and habitually rumpled tweed suit, pipe in one hand and a teacup halfway to his mouth, as if he had been in the act of taking a sip when Kate had stepped out of thin air. Naturally, he was smiling.
"Can I help you?"
Dr. Pym said. For a moment, Kate could only stand and stare, trying and failing to grasp what had happened.
"Dr. Pym,"
she began, then stopped, remembering her mistake in the dungeon the night before, when it turned out he hadn't the foggiest notion who she was.
Do you know who I am?"
"Of course," he replied amiably. "You're the young lady who just appeared in my study."
Her heart sank. She had traveled even further into the past, back to a time before their meeting in the prison, and not just into the past, to another place. As she looked out the window, seeing in the cars, a lamppost, everything that suggested a normal human city, it was obvious she was somewhere very far from Cambridge Falls.
How was any of this possible?
She hadn't placed a photograph in the book. She hadn't even opened it.
"My dear,"
the old man said, interrupting her thoughts and pointing with the end of his pipe at the book,
"is that what I think it is?"
"Yes, but why did it bring me here? All I did was touch it."
"Did you now? Fascinating."
"I picked it up before Hamish could, just like you told me to."
She knew he wouldn't understand what she was saying, but she couldn't help herself. It was all pouring out.
"Hamish, is that oaf involved in this?
Wait, you must have known what was going to happen. That's why you told me to touch the book first."
"I did? Can't say as I remember."
"No, not now, in the future. But how would you know the book would take me here, unless..."
Kate could feel the answer tugging at her that she just had to keep talking.
"You must have done something. Back in the dwarf throne room, when you told me to make sure I touched the book first, you put your hand on my head, and I felt this tingling. You must have done some spell to make the book bring me here."
Dr. Pym leaned back in his chair, placed his teacup on a messy stack of papers, stuck his pipe in his mouth, and proceeded to pat himself down for matches.
"I think you had best tell me everything. But first..."
His pipe lit, he shook out the match, then reached forward.
"Why don't you give me that?
I suspect the type of magic that brought you here is somewhat unstable, and I don't want you popping off.
But what if the book disappears and I can't get back? It must already exist, right? In this time.
Ah, I take it the book has disappeared once before.
Yes.
And this other instance, how much time passed before it vanished?
Kate thought back. She and Emma had gone into the past, found Michael, been captured by the secretary, and dragged to that strange fantasy ball, then had been forced to sit on the patio talking to the Countess. Half an hour, about.
So, we have a bit of a window. Come, come.
He held out his hands, and Kate relinquished the book. Dr. Pym placed it on the desk behind him.
Now, he said, from the beginning.
Kate stamped her foot in anger. No, I've already told you twice. You just don't remember because it hasn't happened yet.
Well, that hardly seems my fault.
But there's no time. Hamish is going to have his dwarves kill us if we...
My dear, why do you keep mentioning Hamish? That scoundrel would never have the authority to kill anyone.
But he's king of the dwarves. Dr. Pym chuckled.
No, no. I'm afraid that simply couldn't be. I am close friends with the present queen, Esmeralda. Lovely woman, and she agrees with me that Hamish would make a disastrous king. Robbie is to assume the throne.
But she died without a will, Kate could hear herself shouting. And because Hamish was older, he got to be king, and he wants the book. He's in the vault right now with Michael. Well, not now, now, future now. She knew she wasn't making much sense. She wanted to pick up something and throw it at the wizard to make him understand.
And you can't do anything because you're still locked in the dungeon back in the dwarf city. Oh, that is bad, Dr. Pym said, exhaling a cloud of smoke. Very bad indeed, but I'm afraid I still don't understand. How could Hamish get into the vault? It's quite impossible without...
He stopped and gazed at Kate. His voice became very soft.
You opened the vault.
Kate nodded. He leaned forward.
You say you have a brother?
And a sister, Michael and Emma. And they're both in trouble. You have to do something. Kate could feel her eyes welling with tears.
Oh, dear. Dr. Pym said quietly, I'm afraid now I must insist you do tell me everything from the beginning.
Stanislaus! It was a woman's voice. Kate turned, listening to footsteps approaching down a hall, the voice getting closer.
Rich is stuck at the college. I think we should just go ahead and have lunch, don't you? And who are you talking to?
The door opened, and a young woman entered. She was wearing jeans and a grey sweater. She had dark blonde hair, hazel eyes, and a kind face. She was casually beautiful. The moment Kate saw her, two things happened. First, she realized the woman she was looking at was her mother. Second, the floor disappeared beneath her feet.
Where is it?
Kate stood at the pedestal, bathed in greenish light, gasping, her heart hammering in her chest. Before she could begin to process what had happened, she was seized by the arm and yanked around.
Where is it?
Her face was sprayed with spittle. She was dimly aware of being shaken violently. The book, that's what he was yelling about. The book was gone. But so what? She had seen her mother.
You tricked me! You and that wizard!
Her mother! She had seen her mother!
I'll kill you!
Kate saw something flash in Hamish's hand, then heard footsteps behind her, and she was wrenched out of his grip and thrown to the ground. She could hear Wallace arguing with the king that they might need Kate to get the book back. They had to bring her to the wizard. She knew he was saving her life.
Are you okay?
Michael was kneeling beside her.
You disappeared, then you came back, but the book was gone. What happened?
Kate gripped her brother's hand.
I saw.
There was a sound of a blow, and Wallace staggered back. Hamish was breathing loudly through his beard, one hand grasping his knife, the other curled into a meaty fist. For a moment, the dwarf king glared at Kate. Then he sheathed his knife and barked,
"Bring 'em! But if that wizard don't get me book back, they all die. The old man and the brats."
And he turned and stalked out of the chamber. A dwarf grabbed Michael by the collar and dragged him into the tunnel. She hadn't been able to tell him. Another dwarf approached Kate, but Wallace waved him off. He placed a gentle hand on her shoulder and guided her toward the door.
"You all right, then?"
he asked quietly.
"Yes,"
Kate replied, her mouth dry.
"Thank you."
Walking down the dark tunnel, Kate replayed the memory of her mother entering the room. She wanted to lock in the details before they had a chance to fade. She saw her mother's blonde hair and hazel eyes, her face intelligent, gentle, surprised at finding this girl standing before her.
Richard. That was the name her mother had said. That had to be their father. Kate marveled at how seemingly so little a voice in the hall, a name, a woman walking through a door could mean so much.
But, and here Kate felt herself growing angry, why hadn't Dr. Pym told them he knew their parents? Why would he keep that secret? Could he find them now? And how was it that simply touching the book had sent her into the past? For that matter, how had she come back with no book at all? Her head spun with questions. Kate forced herself to stay calm. She had seen her mother. For now, that was enough. The party arrived in the golden cavern and clustered around the pool. The dwarves stared at the dark water nervously. Kate could tell Michael was burning to talk to her, but the guard held him back. Hamish was ranting about the things he was going to do to Dr. Pym.
"I'll rip his bleeding spine out! I'll make him eat his own foot!"
And, still ranting, he pushed the first dwarf into the pool. The monster did not reappear, and the journey back through the trench was uneventful. As she swam, Kate could see the twin lights of Michael and his guard ahead, and the few times she looked back, Wallace was there, knife gripped in his hand, staring into the darkness below, ready to protect her in case of attack. But nothing happened. Then her head broke the surface of the pool, and she sucked in the stale cave air, and heard a voice that froze her heart.
"Ah, there she is!"
Cold hands lifted her up. As the water cleared her eyes, she saw that all the dwarves, including old white-bearded Fergus, were on their knees, hands bound behind their backs. A dozen black-clad figures, brandishing swords and crossbows, stood guard over them. One of the screechers held Michael by the shoulders. He looked frightened but unharmed. Kate's eyes went to the speaker, who was moving toward her, giggling and rubbing his hands.
My dear,"
cooed the secretary, smiling his grey-toothed smile.
"How very nice to see you again."
Chapter 18. The Raven. Emma and Gabriel, along with the girl Dina and the rest of the band, climbed the mountain along no trail that Emma could see, but that Gabriel and the others seemed to know by heart. Gabriel explained they would circle the peak to a secret tunnel that the village scouts used to spy on the dead city. The way was steep and rocky, and they had been climbing for less than half an hour when Gabriel abruptly picked Emma up and swung her onto his back.
"We must move more quickly."
Gabriel had not wanted to take Emma, but Granny Pete had insisted.
She is tied to the Atlas. If you find it, you will need her.
That's right, Emma had said. And you gotta take Dina too, or I'm not coming.
And so Emma had been outfitted with new clothes and boots and a knife. And an hour after the meeting, she and Dina and the small band of men had been given a blessing from Granny Pete and had set off up the mountain. Gabriel called for them to stop in a stand of pines just below the summit while he sent a scout to the tunnel entrance. The men squatted and checked their weapons in silence. Gabriel was conferring quietly with two of his men, so Emma wandered off through the trees. 10 yards in, the mountain gave way to a sharp cliff. Emma found a boulder jutting out past the trees and scrambled up the side. Lying on her stomach, she had a view out across the valley, and for the first time in 2 days, she saw Cambridge Falls. The blue expanse of lake shone jewel-like in the midday sun, and on its far side, Emma could make out a dark clustering she guessed was the houses of the town. Seeing Cambridge Falls again, the place where everything had begun, made her think of her brother and sister. Granny Pete had said Dr. Pym was with them. That gave her hope. Perhaps Kate and Michael would even be waiting in the village when she and Gabriel returned. Wouldn't that be something? Arriving in the village, having defeated the Countess's screechers, leading all these poor, grateful men. Michael would no doubt want to hear the details of the battle, but she'd just wave her hand and say, "Oh, you know how battles are. You've seen one, you've seen them all." And if Kate scolded her for abandoning them back in the tunnels, Emma would apologize and tell Kate she was absolutely right. Though, she would add after a moment's pause, "If I hadn't gone back, I couldn't have saved Gabriel's life, but you know best, Kate, dear." Emma smiled, and for a moment she actually relaxed, allowing herself to savor the warmth of the rock beneath her, the cool of the wind against her face, and what was, in many respects, a beautiful summer's day.
"You ought to get down from there."
Emma lifted herself up and looked back over her shoulder. Dina stood just inside the trees.
"Someone could see you."
Emma laughed.
"Who's going to see me up here?" "You don't know. The witch, she's got ways. You shouldn't take the chance."
Emma sensed the girl was right. Unfortunately, whenever someone told Emma she should do this or shouldn't do that, her lifelong habit had been immediately to do the exact opposite.
"Let her see me. I'm not afraid of her."
Just then, a echoed across the valley. Emma looked up to see a large black raven soaring high above their heads. She felt a sudden queasiness in the pit of her stomach as she remembered what